Will you please stand for the reading of God's Word? Today I'll be reading from Ezekiel 36, 26 through 28. And I will give you a new heart and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes and be careful to obey my rules. You shall dwell in the land that I gave your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your God. You may be seated.
Good morning. It's a blessing to be able to come here on such a beautiful day and to be with such wonderful Christian people. For the next three lessons tonight, or this morning, tonight, and next Sunday, Lord willing, we're going to be thinking about the topic of marriage. Now, we'll tell you that these are some lessons that I have prepared for much of this year and presented at Polishing the Pulpit. And they were focused more upon minister preachers and their families at that time, and elders and deacons. And I've tried and they were also 45 to 55 minutes, so I've tried to scale them down a little bit, focus them more on a general audience, and not make them 50 minutes. But I believe that there are some very important things for our marriages to consider. And so I really want to encourage you to try to be here to all of them. And if you would, really consider coming back tonight if you're to think about a topic of the foundation of our marriage and some things that I want to say that we should be discussing and thinking about in our homes that we'll have an opportunity to say on Sunday night that maybe we couldn't say on Sunday morning with all the children and things present. It's a blessing to be able to think about marriage. You know, marriage is a wonderful, wonderful creation of God. But in a lot of ways, when we think about marriage, we want to think about the true person of marriage this morning and looking at the individual that makes the marriage. I want us to think about the concept of that behind closed doors, the real marriage exists. And lots of times we get focused on what people see outside the door, outside when we're out in public and when we come to church and things like that. But behind closed doors, the real marriage exists. And there's a real truth to the idea that we really don't know what is existing behind someone else's closed doors. We don't really know what their marriage really looks like. And sometimes this is the reason we're shocked when we hear about a couple getting a divorce or something when we thought they had a strong marriage. And this morning I want you to be thinking about the true person, because I want you to know there are no perfect families. That every family has problems. You know, you probably did the Sunday morning dance this morning. I know we were doing that dance a little bit. You know the Sunday morning dance, don't you? It's the dance where you're rushing around. Kids, we've got to get up and we've got to get some breakfast. And then, and there's usually some argument going on, and we're trying to get everybody dressed, and we're looking down and making sure we got the right shoes on. No, those are not the right shoes. We had one who ran out this morning with the wrong shoes on. No, come back. But at least they were the same pair of shoes. And I made it here with a belt. We're thankful for that. One, I was putting a belt on Caleb as we were walking in the door out here. And so things get a little crazy sometimes. There's no perfect family. And yet we must realize that all families are dysfunctional and have their challenges, just often a matter of how much, right? And so what we want to think about in these lessons is how do we go to the true marriage? And how do we become honest with ourselves and with our spouses and try to move toward not just a pretending showing a marriage to other people, not just a pretending even for our spouse or pretending for our family, or pretending for the church, but trying to really investigate and find out the strength of our marriage and make it stronger. And so we want to think about this morning the true person. When we think about the true person, we have to think about our heart. You see, the purposes of a person's heart are deep waters, Proverbs says, but the one who has insights will draw them out. It's kind of challenging to think about really wanting to know the deep waters, the deeper thoughts of our spouse. And being allowed and allowing our spouse to share what's really going on in their heart and in their mind. See, we first have to consider the rhythm of our hearts. We have to consider what's going on in our hearts, in our lives. I think about Romans chapter 8, verse 27, when it says that God searches our hearts. Our hearts get out of rhythm because of life experiences, because of hurts and pain. And we start saying, you know, this is just the way I am, but we haven't always been that way. We're taught as kids to behave, and we often can modify our behavior to avoid pain. And therefore, we often catch ourselves doing the right behaviors, but not doing it with the right heart. In our marriages, lots of times, we will be doing the right behaviors, but our heart is not in the marriage. Our heart is not in love with our spouse. We're not connected. And so we're doing the right outward actions, but our heart's not there. And if we don't constantly monitor the heart of our marriage, and the heart that I have for my spouse, then I can get caught up in a pretending that eventually can collapse like a deck of cards. You see, we got to consider the rhythm of our own hearts and the rhythm of our spouse's heart. The Bible teaches us that our hearts shape who we are. Now, because of time this morning, we won't look at each of these passages in depth, but Jesus taught us in Matthew chapter 15 that what we do in our actions, that our deeds, the words we say, the actions we do, come from our hearts. And remember, the Pharisees were arguing about what outward cleansing food we can eat and the various types of Jewish purification laws. And Jesus says it's not the things that you put into your mouth that defile you, but it's the things that come out of your mouth that defile you, because they proceed from the heart. You see, our hearts and who we are shape us, because, like it or not, what is in our heart is going to come out, Jesus says, in our words, in our life, in our actions. In Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, the Bible says, "Keep your heart with all vigilance or diligence, for from it flows the wellsprings of life." And in Jeremiah, the Bible says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it?" See, our hearts shape who we are. And so when we need to think about what is the condition of the heart of my spouse, what's the condition of the heart of my life, and trying to understand the true person who's there, so I want to share four quick things with you. You need to think about your own heart, because probably these are some things that maybe you haven't even been honest with what is going on in your own heart over the years. First of all, you need to think about your background. And how the background that you have, or the background of your spouse, will shape their heart. You know, we go into marriage and we often assume that our spouse had a similar background as us. And so we will then put those projections upon them. What we often need to realize, and we often do realize as time goes along, that they actually had a lot different background. That their family of origin is different than ours. And here's a big realization we often get, is just because our family of origin did it that way doesn't mean that ours is always right and theirs is always wrong. You see, we have to think about our backgrounds or our past experiences. You might have heard the expression, well, they have a wall around their heart. What we're saying by that expression is they put up some type of a barrier so that they will not allow someone into their heart. And sometimes those people are married, aren't they? They don't let their spouse even into their heart because they're afraid to really trust. I want to illustrate by thinking about a book that I had read about a lady. She was telling about her own heart. And she said that her background involved the idea of her losing her mother when she was a young girl. And then her dad died of tuberculosis. And then she went to live with an abusive grandmother who lived far away, and she was sent to her home. And she had an alcoholic father. And she's going to be raised in this home and in some ways moved back and forth between family. And her brother are raised in this home where they're often abused and never felt appreciated or wanted. And then she goes into her first marriage, and that marriage is a marriage that involved that man also being alcoholic and abusive, and she was hit and hurt and abused. And so she asked a friend, she said, now that she was divorced, and she'd been divorced for like 15 or 20 years and hadn't really dated anybody, and she said, why is it that men Why is it that I can't ever get a date? That men don't like me. And she, and her friend said, well, it's the wall that you put up. It's what they see when they look at you. And she said, what do you mean what they see when they look at me? You're saying I don't look very pretty? So no, they see that you've got a complete wall. And that wall has electric fence, and it's a huge brick wall, and it's got barbed wire, and it says, don't come near to me. And lots of times we can have that wall up in our heart, can't we? Where we don't want to let other people in because we're afraid if we let them in, they'll hurt us. They'll harm us. And so we don't allow others into our life. In the books Wild at Heart and Captivating, John and Stacey Eldridge talk about it in the terms of our wounds. Men are often wounded because they've been asking the question, do I have what it takes? And women are often wounded because they're asking the question, am I lovely? Am I valuable? And when we hear those questions answered negatively as we grow up and then as we become adults, and we hear the message that you don't have what it takes or you're not valuable, you're not lovely, then it harms and shapes our hearts. And so our hearts are wounded. Damaged hearts always affect our intimate relationships. You see, the old adage is, hurt people hurt people. And when you're married to a hurt person, they're going to hurt you some. You see, we need to think about our hearts. Maybe the case that you've been married to someone for 5 years, but you really don't know much about their background, or 10 years, or 20 years. Oftentimes, a lot of the actions they do now are shaped by what has happened in our backgrounds, our past. And we've got to be attuned to our hearts. Lots of times, a lot of things that we thought we had dealt with, we thought we had buried, are actually still causing us problems today because we really haven't ever dealt with them as an individual. So we've got to think about our backgrounds, and that leads to another area of our insecurities. I think about Song of Solomon. And of course, Song of Solomon is a love story book, a very intimate book. And in that opening chapter, you have this insecurity expressed. And when I think about insecurities, men have insecurities, but we're going to think about men in just a moment. I mainly want to focus on the women for just a minute. The lady says, I am very dark, but lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Do not gaze at me because I am dark, because the sun has looked upon me. For my mother's sons were angry with me. They made me keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I have not kept. Notice the insecurity that this lady begins with as she approaches Solomon, and as she wants Solomon to love her, she's beginning by feeling very insecure about how she looks. We live in a world today where so many ladies feel insecure and they feel discouraged because our world sends messages over and over from all the advertisement, for all the images we see on social media about what other people look like and the way they look. And they're saying, I am very dark. I don't feel like I look very pretty, is what she's saying. My brothers have been angry with me. They made me work outside all the time, so I'm not very polished. I'm not very fair-skinned because I've been working outside in the vineyard and doing all this hard work. See, there's a lot of insecurities there in the way we look, the way we feel. In 1 Peter chapter 3, Peter is speaking about this same concept in many ways, and he says in verse 7, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel. Now, this concept of the weaker vessel certainly does not mean that women are in any way less valuable or worth any less than men. In many ways, it's not even referring to strength. It may be simply physical strength. They're not often as strong as men. But it seems to me the idea that Peter at least is getting to, when he's talking about husbands living and dwelling with them in an understanding way, is realizing that your view, men, of your wife is directly going to affect how they view themselves. And then in a lot of ways, we as husbands have the power to crush or the power to build up our wife's spirit and their feelings for themselves and their self-esteem. And that we need to be very careful because your spouse, men and women, are more insecure than you think. Almost always, all of us struggle with insecurities. And we have to be aware that how I approach and how I deal with them is going to directly affect then how they feel about themselves. And that they're often going to feel, because they're living in a world where they're, women today are living in a world where they're put down so much and they have so many expectations, and they're feeling like a failure on so many points. Failure as a mom, a failure as a worker, and they have so many things they're trying to do, and they feel like they can never succeed at all of them, so they fail at all of them, it seems. And men, we need to be there to not reinforce that failure message, but rather to encourage them and let them know they are valued and loved. But then as we reflect upon our hearts, we need to be aware of our fears. So we think about our backgrounds, we think about our insecurities, then we think about our fears as we try to be real in our marriage, and we look at the true person that's in the marriage, because the person affects the union. Now, I thought about ladies with the insecurities. I want to think about men with fears. Because men tend to be, we think more about the lines of fears than we probably do insecurities. A lot of men's fears involve the idea of having our true heart, what we really think, exposed. We're afraid that if our wife really knew our fears, then she would not respect us. She wouldn't appreciate us. And so we struggle with fears. You know, fear is the roots. And the plant is what comes out of the fear. And so the plant may be anger. The plant may be conflict and name calling. The plant may be, you know, keeping ourselves reserved and not really being involved in the relationship and pulling back and withdrawing and doing our own thing and staying away from the relationship. But the real fear, the real root, the real cause is we're afraid. We're afraid that we won't have what it takes to be the father we need to be. That we're afraid that we don't know what it is to really discipline our children, so we just stand back and allow her to do it. And it's not that we're fearful of those things, because we fear that we'll fail. And then when we fail, she'll know that we're really not what we claim to be, and we can't really do what we need to do. We don't have what it takes. And we fear often that we'll be replaced, not by another man, but we just fear that we are going to fail. And so there's fears there. And our pride causes us to be defensive and arrogant and to not share our fears, because the worst thing to do often for a man would be to share that he's afraid, because we're not supposed to be afraid. You see, our fears often keep us from allowing our true heart to be seen and actually even sharing with someone who can give us strength. And so as we think about the fourth thing, our stresses. Maybe you're going through a time in your life where you're extremely stressed. Maybe there's financial pressure or financial stress. Or maybe there's a lot of stress at work and anxiety and worry. So we need to be thinking about these four things. So think about your spouse. Think about yourself as you think about your heart. What's going on in their background? What's going on in their insecurities? What's going on in their fears, and what stresses are they feeling? You see, the things that then come out, the way we relate to one another, maybe the tension that we feel with one another, and maybe the problem we're having really isn't the problem, but it's really rooted in one of these issues. And if we really want to grow into what Jesus would want us to grow into, we've got to learn and be open in our marriage. You see, the beauty of marriage is that someone knows all of our problems. They know all of our fears, our insecurities, our stresses, and our background, our failings. And they love us. And they care for us. They encourage us. Ezekiel said that we need a new heart. He says, I'll give you a new heart, a new spirit I will put within you. And I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh. And I will put my spirit within you, and I will cause you to walk in my statutes and be careful to obey my rules. For you shall dwell in the land that I shall give to your fathers. Ezekiel talks about that we need a new heart. See, often as we think about our Christian life and we think about our individual lives, when our hearts are damaged, and they're wounded because of our background. We need to find a new heart. We need to find new strength. We need to grow. We need to mature. We need to be praying and seeking, as Jesus says, a pure heart where we can be open and transparent and we can be real. We can be real with who we are before God. You see, we need a new heart. So then, as we think about, so we worked on our own heart, we try to understand, we understand our backgrounds, our insecurities, our fears, our stresses. Well, then we need to think about, how do we shape our hearts together? And how do we try to communicate in a way that allows each person to be validated in who their heart is? I want to share that what this involves is what God intended marriage to be back in the Garden of Eden. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 2 and look at those ancient passages once again. When he talks about this concept of being transparent and vulnerable, in Genesis chapter 2, he says in verses 24 and following, "Therefore a man," this is after he had created Eve from the rib of Adam because there was not a helper fit for him, "and he found and created Eve and he brought her to the man." And therefore he says in verse 24, summary statement here, "Therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother," that's the leaving of our family of origin, "and cleave or hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." That's the union. And that's the goal I was able to attend them. The funeral of Brother Bob Brooks, who's been a blessing to our church and grew up in this church, of his wife this past Thursday. And they were married 65 years. And for the last several years, she had not truly been there in the sense that she had had Alzheimer's or dementia and her mind was not herself. But when Richard Youngblood spoke at the funeral, it had been also grew up here with him, and even though Brother Bob was about 15 years older. And they had been friends through the years, and he talked about how they had been a great team and how they worked together so well and how they had had a union that exemplified, and he used this passage, that it has exemplified the one flesh union that we're supposed to have in marriage. The idea is that we bring our two individual lives together and that we serve as a family and as a team. And he talked about how they had served various churches throughout the U.S. and different states and had accomplished several things in trying to build up churches. And he said what was always interesting is how if you met Bob and you were talking to Bob about something, then later on you talked to Betty, they were both passionate about the same project or the same idea. They both shared similar passions about what they were engaged in. He was talking about that concept. And isn't that what marriage is about? That's what God created marriage to be here. This one flesh union. And he says, "And the man and his wife," verse 25, "were both naked, were not ashamed." And we often focus on that aspect being the physical aspect and talk about that. But here's what I want you to see, is that don't look at that from a purely physical perspective of these two verses. But think about the one flesh and think about the both naked and not ashamed as the ideal aspect that we're all should be desiring in marriage. That is that we can be fully open in who we are. Fully open in who we are. That I can be myself in a way that is a struggling person before God and that is trying to mature in God. In a way that I am able to share my fears and my insecurities and my background and all the problems that I bring from that and all the challenges I face now and the stresses of life. And I can be vulnerable and I can be transparent and I can expect and trust that my spouse will love me. You see, that I can be open and not ashamed of that because they love me and they're committed to me and they're going to be there through the hard times through the good times. See, that's what marriage is about. And that's about being transparent and vulnerable and about being the true person so that we're not pretending that we're real with who we are. And you see, so many times we get focused on what the marriage is supposed to be, but before we can get the union right, we have to get the individual right. We have to be real with who we are. Because our insecurities and our background and our fears are going to affect how we relate to our spouse. And so we need to seek greater intimacy. You know, the Bible speaks much of this. It talks about cherishing and loving and treasuring in Ephesians 5. But I want to go to Song of Solomon once again. And in Song of Solomon chapter 2, notice how they are going to talk to one another. She says, I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. In verse number 1, as a lily among the brambles, so is my love among the young women. He says, when you look out, she's like a beautiful flower amongst the thorns. Your wife, your spouse, should be your standard of beauty, men. She's what you're into. She's what is beautiful. Make sure you reassure her with that. And that all these images that she's constantly seeing in the world that is supposed to be beautiful and she feels like she doesn't measure up to, make sure that she knows that she is beautiful in your eyes, that she is the lily among the brambles. And then notice, she says to him, as an apple amongst the trees of the forest, an apple tree amongst the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. Make sure, ladies, that your spouse knows that you respect him and love him and appreciate him above all the other men that are out there. Notice how they reassure each other of their love throughout this book. Down in verses 13 through 14 and in chapter 5, you see the emphasis about him reassuring her of her beauty and her reassuring him of her respect and admiration of him. You see, we need to think and understand that greater intimacy in a close marriage doesn't just happen. We have to become a close marriage through communication, through working at it, through spending time together. We have to do things together, don't we? We have to have recreation together. We have to turn off our phones and our computers and have to talk to each other. We have to maybe set aside some time from our busy schedules, from always carrying the kids all around and all the things we have to do and spend time together. We have to eat together. We have to pray together. We need to come to church together. We need to do things together. If we're going to have a greater intimacy in our marriage, see, we have to be together. We have to think and ask about their feelings. As we bring this to a close, I want to emphasize on this point that men, as you think about being transparent and seeking greater intimacy, I want to say something to the men and something to the women before I leave this. And this kind of goes against what we often hear in our common thought. Hear me out, men. This is going to be hard on you at first. Don't buy into the cultural idea that women are just too complicated. You know the old joke about, here's the book of understanding women and it's this thick, right? Don't buy into the idea that women are just too complicated, too emotional, too confusing to ever be understood. Here's the thing. You're probably never going to understand fully why they feel the way they did. But here's the thing. You need to understand that that's the way they feel. And validate them and seek to understand their emotions and their feelings in those things. You have what they need. You must engage them by offering them your love and your strength. You must try to value their mystery. They're not that way just by accident. God created them beautifully and wonderfully and confusing and mysterious and emotional and all the things they are. Instead of being mad about it or angry about it or being frustrated and quitting on it, seek to love and cherish as God called us to the woman that God has made. Now let me say something to the women real quickly. Women, don't buy into the cultural idea that men don't have feelings and that we're just so tough and that whatever you say to us or whatever you do to us doesn't hurt our feelings. No, men often have very tender feelings, though they hide them from you often. And so realize that your view of them and how you respect them and admire them and appreciate them and how you speak to them is directly going to affect how they view themselves and how they act towards you. And so seek to shape your hearts together by spending time together, by validating and reassuring each other, by talking and thinking and asking about one another's feelings. So realize that marriage just isn't about getting along in the same house. It's about being best friends, soulmates. And this doesn't happen just by, as the movies might say, just by falling in love, but it happens through years of work. It happens by being naked and not ashamed, by being open with one another. If you're in need this morning of the Lord's invitation, if you need to respond and ask for prayers of the church, or if you need to rededicate your life, if you want to put Christ on in baptism, then come as together we stand and sing.